Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
As Bill said, I'm CEO of RightScale. RightScale is a company in the cloud computing management space. And I'm a long-time Santa Barbaran and have been involved in the technology business for probably 25 years in town here. And this one is really the most exciting endeavor that I've ever been involved with. So I'm really pleased to be here talking about RightScale today. And as Bill mentioned, we have 54 employees in our company, and 24 of them are UCSB grads. So we are super grateful. We're very pumped up about UCSB. It's been a great benefit to RightScale, and would encourage any of you who are interested in learning more about working at RightScale, either on an internship basis or a full-time basis later, please check out our website and feel free to contact us. I have my email at the end of the presentation. So again, thanks for having me here. I want to talk this evening about cloud computing, and maybe just start with a little level set for me so I get a sense of the audience. How many of you have heard of cloud computing? See a show of hands? All right, so most of you. And how many of you have used cloud computing? All right, let me ask that in a different way. How many of you have used anything like Google Mail, Yahoo Mail, Hotmail, MapQuest, Google Maps? All right, if you were using those, you were using cloud computing. And it's really one form of cloud computing. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But it's one form, and it is an absolutely disruptive tidal shift that's hitting the way we use computing. It's changing the very way that we compute. It's a long-term trend. It's going to have a major impact on all of our lives. And that's why, hence the title, Your Future is Cloudy, because it's going to affect all of us as we move forward. So let me dive right in here. I hope this evening to talk not only about, in general, about cloud computing, but somewhat about RightScale and what we do specifically, some stories about actual customers, and a little bit of a demo to give you a sense of cloud computing in action. So what is cloud computing? Well, it's been a term that's been used increasingly popularly for a whole range of activities. But the one thing that's in common among all of them is that you're dealing with computer resources, compute, storage, etc., that come from a virtually infinite pool. So that's a key characteristic. Secondly, you can access these on demand. You don't need to order them and wait for a CD to come. You don't need to call a company and fax in a credit card number so that they allocate a server for you within 72 hours. They're available programmatically on demand. Thirdly, they're pay-as-you-go. So some people say pay by the drink. You pay for the resource as you use it. You don't buy the whole server and amortize that over time. You pay as you go. And then finally, the final characteristic, these are all delivered over the internet. So it turns out that those characteristics have been fairly disruptive in the marketplace. And they come across three different models of cloud computing. So when you hear that term, there might be three different levels of offerings that are being referred to. The first one on the left is so-called software in the cloud or software as a service. And it refers to any kind of software that's delivered through a browser across the internet with functionality that happens inside your browser. So examples, I gave some of those examples. It's really the oldest and most popular form of cloud computing. Examples are anything from Gmail, Hotmail, Salesforce.com, other software as a service vendors. Those are all software as a service. In the middle is platform as a service. So there you would find entities like Google App Engine. It's different from the Google Search Engine. Google App Engine is a way, if you wrote an application, right now it's in the Python language, and you put it up into Google App Engine, it will take care of running it for you. It will take care of scalability. It will take care of data storage, et cetera. And that's why we have your application kind of contained in a box. The area of cloud computing that's the newest, and to me the most exciting, which stands alongside the other two, and it's where RightScale plays, is infrastructure as a service. And it's really low-level resources, meaning servers, storage, networking capability, et cetera, offered on this same basis, pay-as-you-go, on demand. And you can see that it's a layered model where you can control which operating system you're running, what kind of database or data model, what programming environment you may be using, as well as an application. So there's a lot more control, and you can see on the axis there, you get more control, more portability as you go to that model, but you need to do more to automate what you're doing, and that's where RightScale comes in. RightScale manages these low-level resources. So RightScale is what we call a cloud management platform, and it lives between the low-level resources. Again, those include things like computer servers as well as storage from Amazon, GoGrid, Rackspace, and others. Eucalyptus, I'll talk more about later, is a project hatched right here at UCSB, and applications that people want to run in the cloud. And RightScale lives in between those, providing automation, cloud-ready solutions, and services and expertise to help companies get up and running quickly. So one of the hallmarks of the way we've approached launching our business and how we focus on doing business is attention to customers. So from day one, when RightScale launched its free service, we were about delivering a product that real people were using on the cloud. And because of that, we started to get early experience in how people were actually using cloud computing from the earliest days of its innovation. So we have over 12,000 users of our free edition. We have hundreds of customers. We've launched almost 400,000 servers on behalf of customers and managed them through RightScale, many, many hours. And we've also managed some of the biggest scaling events where companies had to use a lot of compute resources. I'll talk more about those. So again, we focused on customer traction. And really what the platform offers, three basic things: automation, cloud-neutral portability, and transparency and control across the life cycle of managing your application. It's very seldom that somebody launches an application, never touches it, never modifies it again. It's very common that you have software revisions and so on. So managing that over a whole life cycle of an application becomes critically important. And that's what RightScale focuses on. So let me rewind a little bit to how we got started. RightScale really, in some ways, wouldn't exist without UCSB. RightScale was born at UCSB. The original founder, author, is a guy named Torsten von Eichen. And he was chief architect at Expert City, another local company that got acquired. It's now Citrix Online. And he's our CTO. He is actually a former colleague of the CTO at Amazon. And so he had early information that they were going to bring out this new kind of technology under the cloud computing format. And he was also signed up to teach a graduate course here in the fall of 2006. So Torsten actually organized this course, and what it was a computer science course with about 30 graduate students building a ROR, stands for Ruby on Rails. Ruby on Rails application was really an e-commerce app using cloud computing. And the Amazon offering in the cloud server area is called EC2 for Elastic Compute Cloud. And so what they ended up doing was they got a grant from Amazon to UCSB to run the servers for this course. It was a $3,000 grant. And Torsten thought, oh my gosh, we're going to burn through that money in a weekend if I don't have a way to control who's running what and people can't see what they're running and manage it. And that was the kernel of the idea for RightScale. So he wrote it, used it in the course. They spent $2,100 of the $3,000 because they were now had a way to control how the resources were used. And in his language, there's no going back. Once you are able to use resources in this way, because of the cost savings and the agility in the ability to use them, you never want to go back to the old way. So that's really how we got started. Quick slide about some of the milestones in RightScale's history. We've raised now 3 rounds of funding. It's all unfolded very fast. One of the reasons I'm having so much fun, because the cloud market is exploding quickly. And all the way through this last funding last November. But you know, I imagine if I were in your shoes, if I were a student looking at this slide and a bunch of dots there, it just looks like it just flowed so easily, doesn't it? We taught the course, we made the first release, got a seed investment, and it's just ching. Well, it doesn't really happen that way. Turns out real life is tougher. So I wanted to say a bit about what it was like to raise that last round. I think we all know what's happened to the economy lately. Well, Torsten and I showed up in England on October 6th to present to the company we were raising money from. And when we woke up that morning, this is what the newspapers said. This was October 6th, probably at the very peak of the dive of the stock market on the London Stock Exchange. So those are actual headlines that morning as we went in to raise money. It was not a real happy time. In fact, it felt like an unlucky day. And it turned into an unlucky week. There's a graph of the beginning of the week when we were visiting there at the London Stock Exchange. So it was not easy. There are tense moments when you're getting a business going, even in a growing market like cloud computing. And we were able to raise the money and push ahead. And the reason why is that the core principle that's at work with all this cloud business that you're hearing about is disruptive growth. Disruptive meaning out of the ordinary, that it's really changing the way people consume and deliver IT resources. So again, because we focused on customer traction, we focused on trying to be out there in front of the press, et cetera, et cetera. And this is a very big market. Estimates put it at $24 billion in cloud services by 2012. These are estimates from IDC, a market research company, and that cloud-oriented spending for cloud computing would comprise 25% of information technology spending in the year 2012. That is a huge shift for things to change that quickly. And we all know how much that companies and our entire economy depends on information technology. It's a huge shift. So anyway, this is causing this kind of pattern. These are some graphs that come from our own service. Because we manage servers for people, we know how many they launch. We know what the patterns are. And there's really, those are month tickers at the bottom. It's a little hard to see. But you can see the huge growth, really 800% year over year, and at a 20% monthly growth rate recently, as well as that recent uptick. These are all different kinds of usage that we track, but you can see the pattern there. It's a new way of using servers that's just growing very, very rapidly. Well, what's driving people? So, you know, we asked ourselves, what's driving people to this new way of computing? Well, scalability is one. That means the ability to have the resources there when you need them. Well, why is that important? What does that mean? Well, we've probably all visited websites that got popular and couldn't get on them because they were completely down, or they were so slow that it was really annoying. It's aggravating. And that's because they weren't built to be scalable, and they got overwhelmed, and there's too much traffic hitting a site than it can handle. And that's what we call the success disaster, right? Which is kind of an oxymoron, because you have so much success, that's a great thing, and right when you're having it and you're getting all this traffic and attention, your infrastructure can't handle it. And that's the disaster part. So scalability is an important concern, and many businesses of all different types see peaks and valleys in the demand for their services. They might have month-end computing runs, et cetera. So they're seeing these big fluctuations. And so scalability, the ability to scale up and scale down is important. on-demand resources. So when we talk to folks in enterprises and maybe somebody who's running a business department in a larger company says, wow, it'd be great, let's go out and put up a website for marketing and do XYZ with it, doesn't matter what it is. And they go, great, let's requisition some servers for that and get the infrastructure there so we can put up the website. And they go to the IT department, and the IT department says, great, we're happy to help you. That will be 6 to 8 weeks. We'll have that up and running for you. And they're like, well, wait a minute, the event is over by then. 6 to 8 weeks, that's an eternity. So agility is super important to people. And if you can deliver something that's launchable quickly, it makes a huge difference. So business agility, and that's what on-demand resources give you. And I'll show you a little later how easy it is to launch a server like that in the cloud. Cost savings, of course. The cost savings come from two sources. One of them is the actual pricing per hour when you're able to use Amazon servers at 10 cents an hour for their smallest server, equivalent of $72 a month. It's inexpensive. It's low cost. We hear numbers comparatively of $400, $500, up to $800 per month if you take the fully burdened cost, meaning the cost of not only the server, but the rack that it's in, the power, the cooling, the real estate that it takes up, and the staff who are servicing it. And that's the other side of the savings is automation. So with resources that you can call on automatically, you can automate the launching and the teardown of servers, and it reduces the cost of having more system administration department and overhead. And those system administration people can focus on what really differentiates the business instead of the low-level blocking and tackling. And finally, reliability. So this is what we heard in our survey of what's driving people. Basically, this resolves one of the classic dilemmas, which is you can see the green line there is representing what might be a load on a website. And the shaded area is the actual hardware to accommodate it. You can see at the beginning they made an estimate. They saw something coming, so they built out. Well, of course, they've overbuilt there for quite a while, and they're spending too much money. And then, whoops, guessed wrong, and the green line exceeds, and that's the success disaster right there. So it's very tough when you're building out your own hardware to get it right, to have enough resource there. Whereas if you were, and by the way, when you need to build out, you need to estimate the peak load, and usually people in practice estimate twice the peak load and buy for that instead of the average load. So that is solved by cloud computing. Another way to look at the cost savings is a new kind of math. So it's interesting. If you run one of those small servers for a whole year, it costs $876. If you hire one programmer for one day, fully loaded in a big corporation, it's about in the same ballpark. So where do you want to spend your money? On resources that can be automated or on people where after a day you've burned the same money? Well, it's basically better to throw more hardware at the problem and then optimize later after you find out what the critical points are. Again, completely enabled by cloud computing. So we get a new mindset that's enabled by this new technology delivery mechanism of IT resources. You tend to think of computers now as disposable. When they're so easy to launch, they're so inexpensive, we all know they're going to fail at some point. And, you know, people who spend are professionally career-oriented at this do calculations of the mean time between failure, of disk drives, things like that. We all know they're going to fail, so plan for failure and automate recovery from it. And again, this is all doable inside the cloud. And when you start using cloud resources and free up your time, it means that you can focus on what really will deliver competitive advantage and differentiation for your business instead of this undifferentiated heavy lifting of building out servers, Ethernet cables, infrastructure. At the end of the day, that's not going to differentiate your business probably. It's something else that will. So this frees you up to spend time on that. So we also did some surveys of these tens of thousands of customers that we get on what are the drivers, what's driving you to look at cloud management, which is what we do, RightScale. What's driving you to look at that? Well, people want to be able to manage complexity. It turns out you've got all these resources, really cheap, they're compelling, but how do I use them effectively? How do I get up and running and really control all the complexity that comes with that? Secondly, I really would like to automate it for obvious reasons. And can you help me start using this new form of computing quickly? I see all the benefits. Just give me a fast on-ramp. Get me onto the cloud quickly. And then finally, we, the customer, would like a solution that we know we can trust. So deployment expertise is really another way of saying trust. We want a solution that we know is going to work in situations of high load, failure, et cetera. Performance will be there. So they're looking for expertise, and all of those are drivers. So basically, in short, customers want scalable, cost-effective infrastructure that's outsourced, that they don't have to build and manage, but they find it complex and time-consuming to do it themselves. And they want to avoid lock-in, right? They'd like some freedom to use different vendors when they can. So that really is the driving force behind what we do in the cloud area. Some of the feedback we get as we've helped companies move to cloud computing are things like this. Unexpected benefits. So when you sign up to use data center resources on Amazon, you do it with the same credit card that you buy books there with. It might even be the same account you already have registered there. And we all know how that works. You buy something, it goes on your credit card. It might be, on average, half a month till your credit card bill closes out. Then you got another 20, 30 days to pay that. So suddenly, instead of having to pay in advance to order that server, you get to use it for 45 days before you have to pay. You're getting a float, in effect. So we have customers say, wow, I got a 45-day float on my hosting bill. Of course, I don't need to buy and rack servers. In bigger companies, I get charged back for these servers at an expensive rate, and I have a long lead time. I get to avoid that. I don't fear being TechCrunch. So TechCrunch is a site that covers cool new technology. When they cover you, you get this huge rush. You get a flash crowd hitting your site. And you don't fear it anymore because you know you can scale. And then finally, businesses, wow, our salespeople and our biz dev people can go out there and sell these large contracts, which require a huge amount of computing power. And we can get it done over a couple days because we fire up literally thousands of servers to do it. Who does that matter to? Who are we hearing this from? All company sizes, from the person in the garage up to enterprise-level customers. And here are a collection of them. So some of these you may recognize, some of them not. These are a collection, just a subset of some of the customers that we have, ranging from tiny companies that you may never have heard of. Playfish is a gaming company. I'll talk more about Animoto in a minute. ESPN, big, obviously, sports media company. Eli Lilly is a pharmaceutical. Harvard University is using our free educational version. I like to think of them as the UCSB of the East. And by the way, we do have a free version that we offer to educational institutions. It's a free version of our paid version just to stimulate usage and encourage research and so on that can be enabled and helped by cloud computing. So they're using it in the medical school there. So these are all examples, and I love that quote from the CTO of Animoto. I asked him, would you recommend RightScale to a friend? He said, heck, I'd let RightScale date my daughter if I had one, which is a little giveaway. Most of you are young, but those who have daughters, he doesn't have a daughter, so it's easy for him to say. But let me talk a little bit about them. I wanted to give you some examples. I said I'd give some examples. And to me, this is great because it crystallizes how is this technology being used. Animoto, anybody know or use Animoto out here? Yeah, a few of you. It's a very cool website. How it works is you go to Animoto, It lets you upload your photos, your digital photos. You can either upload your own music or choose some from a wide selection that they have. And then you say, make a movie out of it. And it takes your photos and applies sort of sophisticated TV-level transitions, fades, dissolves, and animations to create a movie in time with the music. So it takes the pace and the mood of the music into account when it's generating these transitions and so on. They call it cinematic artificial intelligence. And it's a process that's very CPU intensive, meaning it burns a lot of compute cycles. So it's perfect for cloud computing. Well, here's the story. Animoto started out, they're running along, they'd been a customer of ours maybe 8-10 months. They were a very early customer. Their business has grown great. Before you know it, they're running 50 servers. 50 servers to compute this. And they're growing along just fine. And they decided, hey, we should do a Facebook plugin. So stop for a minute and think about how that's going to work. So you have a button on Facebook that says, take all my photos on Facebook, upload them to Animoto, make my movie, and email it to all my friends on Facebook who say, that's cool, do the same for me. You can see what's coming. The thing went viral. So last spring, they released their Facebook plugin. This is an actual graph. And they went from their 50 servers, which I thought was quite fine, to 3,500 servers in 3.5 days using RightScale. The system automatically scaled up. I cannot tell you that we were sitting around drinking Mai Tais at the beach during that process. It was a pretty wild process at RightScale, making sure that everything held fast. But that kind of a scaling event is massive and unprecedented, not in the whole history of computing, but really in the history of startup companies who don't have that much money, who do something like this Facebook plugin with a cool app and need access to that kind of computing power. Before cloud computing, how would they have done that? Where would they have gotten the funding? How long would it have taken? How would they have known that they would need 3,500 or 2,500 or how many? So this is the kind of thing that cloud computing is enabling. And it really gets reflected across different examples. Here's another one of my favorites. It's a customer called StarCut. StarCut's business is powering the delivery of content over mobile devices. So phones, PDAs, etc. And what they do is they work with publishers or content providers and help them format and deliver their content on iPhones, phones, PDAs, etc., so that it's readable, looks good. So here, you know, they talked about RightScale at a conference, and I asked for a copy of the slides. And they were talking about, you know, their requirements in the text up there, but what I like is the graph. Because if you look at this graph, what you can see is Oscar night on Sunday evening there. And the load goes at about 4 times what the rest of the load was. So a perfect example of that peak demand. Oscar night hits. Of course, there are a lot of people interested in the Oscars, and the site scales up. And then as the traffic scaled down, they released those servers. They didn't have to pay for them. Well, it turns out it's not restricted to Oscars. This is a graph of StarCut powering stock quotes. That's how people view stock quotes every day. Those are daily, those sort of devil horn pattern is checking stock quotes in the morning, dips a little bit through lunch, afternoon, zips up again, and goes away. And look how predictable we are. Stock quote checkers do the same thing every day. It's a very common pattern. So they actually use a feature of RightScale called scheduled scaling that fires up the servers in advance of the morning check and the afternoon check because they can see that it's coming and then they tail off on Saturday and Sunday, obviously. And this one is also cool. This is StarCut powering content for CNBC for the Beijing Olympics. And what I think is cool there is if you look through the middle just after week 33, you'll see one big spike. That was when Michael Phelps won his record, what was it? How many was it? 8? His record number of gold medals big spike there of people who found out about that and wanted to go on their mobile device and check it out. And so I was listening to the sysadmin talk about this, and he said what's even cooler from a system administrator's point of view is if you rewind back to the left, before week 32, you see an even bigger spike. That's when StarCut ran a sandbox test, a stress test against their system to make sure it worked. And so again, the power of cloud computing, infinite resources available on demand, you acquire them, you let them go when you're done. They were able to do this huge test before the Olympics ever started to validate that the system would work, and then shut it off, stop paying for it. And they knew. They had confidence going in. So I think, I don't know, time-wise, maybe I'll skip the demo. Is there time?
We're good.
I'm going to switch over and just do a very quick demo. This is the RightScale interface itself. How many of you think that's about the most exciting interface you've ever seen? I thought so. Okay, so it looks a little boring, but I just wanted to show you a few things. We're going to go over here and look at the main dashboard. So what you're looking at here, you should think of this as kind of a web portal into your virtual data center running somewhere else. Each of these items refers to servers and configurations and different software that's run. This is a demonstration account, so these aren't real servers running for people. But you get a view into it. We don't own any of these servers. We don't have any of them on our premises. They're running somewhere else. And what I wanted to show you first of all is we have a collection from a partner company called Bitnami. And there's a WordPress server that I launched, 3.5 hours ago, you can see over here. And if we click into that guy, it's a server that runs a blog. It came up with a DNS address, meaning an IP address on the internet. And if I click on this, it actually runs it. So I figured, you know, maybe the chancellor might want a blog about RightScale after hearing about it tonight. So I've taken the liberty of setting up a server with his blog so that he can get right to it. I don't know if somebody could pass that on, maybe to him. Anyway, that's how easy it was. 3.5 hours ago, I just pushed a launch button and it ran. So that's how easy it is to launch. I wanted to show you one other part of the system. Here I've clicked on a collection of servers running together, and this really shows how the auto-scaling works. So if we go into one of the web servers called a front end here and click on the monitoring tab, we have another server that's launching what we call synthetic traffic, meaning fake traffic. So it's emulating users hitting the site in that kind of sine wave pattern. And so you see that over 90-minute intervals, the traffic goes up and down. And what that forces the system to do is launch new servers. So if I look at this graph here, you can see, I'm going to zoom in a little bit, this is a CPU load on that server. Here the green time is idle time, the blue time is busy. You can see this sort of pattern where the server's getting busier and busier, and then it drops down and gets freed up. And the reason that's happening is that RightScale, all day long, our sales guys show this and demonstrate it, is automatically launching other servers to help take some of the load. And that's really the core of how this auto-scaling works. As that server reaches a threshold of being busy, we launch other servers to help out. And then as it tails off and it gets freed up, we terminate those. So over in the left here, you can see that 10 minutes ago while I was talking, an app server was automatically launched to help take the load off this system. So those are just a couple of quick examples, but I'm very passionate about it. I'm a type of guy who gets excited about servers, and being able to run them, especially when I don't have to run and manage them in my own company, having access to thousands of these or tens of thousands running somewhere else, managed by somebody else at a low cost, is really exciting, and it's the key to this breakthrough here. So, other innovations. Well, this is the project I mentioned earlier that was born out of UCSB. This kind of approach to organizing and delivering compute servers, storage, etc., was very compelling. And it wasn't long before people got the idea, hey, wow, I already invested in a data center. I have 5,000 machines. I'd like to organize those in a cloud-like format internally and be able to access them in the same way, because it's going to be more efficient. It's going to allow me to get more workloads done without investing in more servers, more data center space. So hence the concept of a private cloud was born. And Rich Wolski, professor of computer science here, and Eucalyptus is a close partner of ours, got the great idea of taking the interface that Amazon built, again, it's called EC2, and cloning it and building it on top of other open source components, and then adding this Eucalyptus layer that would let anybody install that on their own set of servers, and it would suddenly look like EC2 to the world with the same interface as EC2. Well, that was a perfect marriage with us, even though that project started independently. What RightScale does is it manages those resources using interfaces like EC2. So this was really exciting when we heard that it was happening, and I expect they'll support other interfaces besides that. But what are the advantages? Well, you don't worry about security and compliance if you're running inside your own data center in the same way that you might be concerned about it if it's external. You can leverage existing investments. So while for new build-outs and excess capacity, you might want to use cloud resources, if you've already invested in a data center and you've spent the money, you'd like to use that because it's for obvious reasons. It just leverages your existing investment. And then finally, it powers those resources on this new cloud model, which is a more effective way to use them. And it enables something called hybrid clouds. A hybrid cloud would be, I've got a private cloud, I use that, and when I need additional resources because of seasonal demand or new projects, or I just don't have enough internally, I'm going to go out into the public cloud, hence the name hybrid cloud. So public cloud, again, is something like Amazon or Sun. You pay for it, you get it, they're running it. Private cloud, internal, and hybrid cloud is a mixture of those. So what are they useful for? Well, you might run development on the public cloud and then bring it in-house where you're sure that it's secure. Or you might do it vice versa. You might develop internally but run something externally. Or you might have your operations going most of the time internally, and then when you need excess capacity, scale out into the public cloud. All different kinds of use cases, but they all benefit from having the same management model, the same architecture model for the resources on both sides. So RightScale is now getting into the business of supporting private clouds as well as public clouds in this hybrid model. And in a few weeks, there'll be a release where you're able to install Eucalyptus on your own data center resources, register those with RightScale, and manage them from RightScale right alongside Amazon, Rackspace, GoGrid, etc. So in the red box, you can see a cloud from our development system where we've created the Eucalyptus cloud and registered it, and the resources show up right alongside the others. Here's another way of looking at that. RightScale lives in the cloud and manages all these resources, and now, really interesting innovation, with Eucalyptus, you'll be able to add your own data center alongside the public clouds. It's been important to us from the beginning to focus on partners in this environment. It's key, in fact, because we know that we can't build everything ourselves. It's a world where there are a lot of different components and solutions, especially on the software side. So we've partnered with companies like MySQL, Splunk, WaveMaker, New Relic, etc. And they come to us because we're really the experts in how to deploy software on the cloud, but they're experts in their given area, database or log file analysis or whatever. And so ultimately, to conclude, the vision that we're going after the ultimate value in delivering cloud computing, which is our slogan, Cloud Computing Delivered, is to create an ecosystem where customers can come in, get access to cloud resources from different cloud providers, as well as prepackaged solutions from software vendors, where the software vendors can publish what they do. They'll know that it runs across multiple clouds, and they know they have access to an easy delivery mechanism for customers. And then the cloud providers themselves are very interested in partnering with us because on this platform, they have an easy way to get customers, and they get automatic access to a lot of content in the form of software packages that are built. So the message I give to businesses out there in the greater world to conclude here is, if you're thinking about cloud computing and analyzing it, you can move beyond that quickly and start utilizing it. There are almost certainly for any business some projects, some workloads that are appropriate to move to the cloud today, so you can start gaining the benefit of cost reduction as well as more agile deployment and ease of management right away. So what are you waiting for? Dive in and give it a spin. And with that, I'll conclude, and I think we have a Q&A period, but thank you very much for your attention.
Hi. I don't know. Sorry. I don't know I get this right, but it seemed to me that Amazon and Rackspace, those people are kind of like the manufacturer of this product, and then you got the end customer, and RightScale is kind of like distributor that, you know, kind of distribute the product to the end customer in the easiest way they can get. My question is it possible for those manufacturer to get into the distribution business, and how do you think whether that would be a problem or whether you have some kind of strategy against it?
To repeat the core of the question, what happens if the cloud providers like Amazon and Rackspace decide to get into RightScale's business? It's a good question. It's been a concern of ours since the beginning of the company. We did focus on it. There are really two answers. One is that we're the only company focusing on and that has a reason to focus on cloud neutrality and the ability to move and be portable among different clouds. So as Amazon brings out its console and other features, it's only going to run with Amazon's cloud. And we learned from surveys that lock-in is a major fear of customers. So we think we're differentiated on that point of cloud neutrality. And secondly, you know, we started very early and we have a head start. So we do have better technology, fuller technology, and it's up to us to stay ahead in that game. But mostly what we've found so far is that there's a lot of open greenfield opportunity because there's so many companies that can start moving to the cloud. It's in its very early days. And no doubt there'll be competition. Any market that's meaningful and big has many players in it.
This is a little off topic, but I just had a question with how you went from, you know, just your idea to getting funding, and, you know, are you guys an IPO right now?
What?
Are you guys a publicly traded company?
No. We're not public. We're a private company, but how did we get to the point of getting funded?
Yeah.
So we did a couple things, mostly working for free. That means not getting paid. And investing a lot of effort. Torsten was pretty brilliant at building the first free version of RightScale on his own time and then introducing it to the world and getting people signing up and using it. So when we went out for funding, we actually had a real product. It was primitive compared to what we have today, but there was a lot already working. It was tangible, it was usable, and we had a set of users who were already using it. And that's a great strength when you go in and you talk to investors, because you don't just have PowerPoint slides and business plans and so on. You have a real product. Even if it's at a prototype stage, I'd recommend that as a great strategy. So customer traction, when you speak about, here's what we see in the market, you can speak not just based on hypotheticals, but actual people that you've talked to who are doing specific things. And it lends a lot of reality to your voice.
Do you have a sense of some of the companies that have their own data centers that they might be using the private or hybrid cloud, if as their equipment is aging, if they might be tending to all like shift towards using the public cloud, or if they may be maintaining that equipment and offering it as part of the public cloud?
Yes, so there's a lot of interest in people who have their own data centers in using the public cloud for a variety of reasons. Overflow, when they don't have enough data center capacity today. As their data centers age, you know, they're faced with what we see out there is various kinds of problems. Data center frustration from not enough data center space, not enough data center power. We've talked to a company that had plenty of space, but they didn't have enough power, and they couldn't solve that to put more compute resources in there. I think where the issue really comes to a head is when you need more resources and you're looking at building an extension or expansion to the data center to accommodate it, then you got big checks being written, and suddenly people are saying, well, wait a minute, what's this cloud computing alternative and how does that stack up? And they start doing analyses like that.
Hi, I was hoping you could briefly talk about what the competitive landscape looks like in the cloud computing management field. I know this seems like a really new and good idea, but are there any other companies that are doing the same thing?
So there are some other companies. They're not really doing the same thing that we do, and there are two ways to look at that. The first one is if you're a venture investor and you're looking at who are the new startups like RightScale, there might be a couple of companies that get mentioned. Again, some of them are much more in the internal data center, enterprise data center management space. The other question about competition, and the one I think about a lot more, is what do our salespeople hear every day? What are our customers comparing RightScale in the cloud to? And it's not other cloud management solutions. It's essentially two things. When we're chosen, we're winning out over do-it-yourself internal implementations, so we're going to use the traditional build-our-own data center, or traditional managed hosting. And those are companies that rent server time, and typically instead of running a virtual server that you run for some period of time and shut down and it somehow goes back into a pool, with traditional managed hosting, they're essentially leasing you a specific box that has your name on it. And there's usually, a 48, 72-hour lead time to get it and a commitment, sometimes 6-month initial commitment. So that's a very different business model and actual operational model of you being on that one specific piece of hardware. That's what our salespeople compete with mostly, is the old world as opposed to the new world.
Yeah, you've mentioned that you use user feedback a lot to drive future development. I was wondering if you could talk about any specific surprises or gotchas that you encountered in the early days or recently.
From user feedback.
From feedback.
Right. So, we solicit feedback in a number of different ways. And these days in a business, especially a tech business, there's so many ways to get in touch with people, right? Beyond just email, we run webinars. So we run online seminars. We run polls. So the stats that you saw came from polls that we ran during the webinars that people can vote on. We have an automated customer survey that goes out after every support incident where people rate the quality of support that they got. So we have like deluge of information hearing about whether we're answering questions or not. I would say that one of the, it wasn't really a gotcha, but it was a dose of reality, is WriteScale is being used to run real business critical applications. And so we have a 24/7, 365 obligation. And when you're only a few people in the early days, your phone is going off in the middle of the night, because especially the other thing about this cloud market and technology in general, it goes international very quickly. So right now it's 3, 4 a.m. in Britain, and whatever in India and Australia, et cetera. So even if it's during their work day, something goes wrong, it might be in the middle of the night here. So it really impressed upon us how mission critical our place in the puzzle was, and we had to react to that to be able to meet those expectations.
I'm just really curious, why did they name Eucalyptus Eucalyptus? Is there a story behind that?
There is. You're asking me a tough question, because there's, I don't know how many letters are in that name, but it's an acronym. I probably could bring it up on the screen. Eucalyptus is an acronym for maybe elastic something 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 something, and it's hard to remember, but it really represents what it does.
With so many companies putting sensitive data on the public cloud, how has security affected your company?
So security is a concern of customers, particularly larger customers. When you're a small or medium-sized business, you're probably happy to get the cost reduction, the agility, et cetera. It's like, fine. Bigger companies, there are lots of regulations that govern public companies, for example, Sarbanes-Oxley. Then, depending on the industry that you're in, if you're in healthcare, there are HIPAA regulations. If you do e-commerce, there's PCI compliance. So it is a very real set of questions. It's more than one question, and we address them depending on who comes to us. And that's actually a part of cloud computing that's evolving. If you ask some enterprises today, they would say, we absolutely are not using the cloud because it's not as secure as our own data center. And you know, there are different ways of looking at that. I think the biggest, well, personally, I would argue that Amazon's cloud is probably more secure than most data centers, because they've got this enormous facility, they've got access privilege controls, and just everything. It's probably more secure than many enterprise data centers. But from a legal point of view, if you can touch it and see it in that room and look at the lock on the door, you're maybe more comfortable than if it's sitting up at Amazon. So I know that they're working very hard on evolving the kinds of certifications and compliance that they have. And it's one of these bell curve spectrums that is just going to be covered more and more as time passes and more satisfactorily answered for more and more companies.
Michael, as a CEO of a high-growth organization, what's the biggest challenge you see for yourself in the next 6 months with WriteScale?
Well, the cloud market seems to be a pretty healthy one despite the economic downturn, which is a good thing, although we did see a number of customers kind of freezing from doing anything, just locking up. So continuing with our revenue goals, sales goals and revenue goals is one challenge we face. Moving quickly enough in a fast-developing field from a technology and product roadmap standpoint is another concern. And then the biggest one, actually, from day one on, is really about people. So finding really great people, at the end of the day, that's what makes a company, creates the value in a company, I believe, is the people.
Last question.
So you've mentioned we've seen this trend towards computing and computing resources as a utility. I was wondering if you saw anything else in the sort of tech space moving in that direction.
I think the other one, this is not so original, but the other one is mobile. I think that all of us are doing more and more processing on smaller devices. There's the advent of the so-called netbook. A bunch of folks in our company got them. It's amazing, you know, $400 and you, because again, so much processing now can be offloaded to the cloud and is done in the cloud, so you can live with a different kind of device. So I think mobility down to iPhones, PDAs, et cetera, is going to be an area of amazing innovation over the next period here.
Mike Crandell, thanks for joining us. Technology Manager.
Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.